And welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so please keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And right now we're going to get off into our commentary. This week's commentary is from Gadget, genetically... Global Alliance Against Genetically Engineered Trees. And their editorial is called From Chainsaws to Gene Guns, The Threats of Genetically Engineered Trees. Introduction. The controversy surrounding genetically engineered food continues as people around the world reject it. Environmentalists, scientists, farmers, and social justice activists warn of the dangers, and the market is in decline. Meanwhile, away from the public eye, companies and geneticists have turned their attention to something that many people around the world consider a symbol of nature and of life itself, the tree. There are field trials of genetically engineered trees in nearly 20 countries now, and while at least 24 species of trees have been engineered, the focus is on three major plantation species, poplar, eucalyptus, and radiata, also known as plantation pine. If genetically engineered trees will be grown commercially, they will be a threat to natural ecosystems and their species, a threat that might even go beyond that of clear-cut logging. What are they doing? At the moment, the involved industry and universities focus on four traits. First of all, insect resistance. They claim that this will kill pests in tree plantations without having to use pesticides by inserting the BT gene into trees. Second, herbicide resistance, which makes it possible to spray vast amounts of Monsanto's Roundup herbicide without harming the trees. Lignin reduction. They claim this will allow cheaper, cleaner, and more profitable production of paper. And fourth, attempting to induce sterility. This trait is developed to counter the problems of gene escape and genetic pollution from GE trees. Here's some myths about forestry. Let's examine some of the facts provided by the forest industry regarding fiber supply and paper and roundwood production. Companies that are involved in genetically engineering trees are now giving us the choice of clear-cutting old-growth forests or using genetically engineered trees to supply the market. While the main reason for this argument might be the attempt to separate forest activists from genetic engineering activists, it is clear that neither logging of old growth nor ancient forests, nor the use of an inherently dangerous technology are needed for truly sustainable forestry. FAO statistics show that industrial roundwood production at about 1.5 billion cubic meters per year was flat through the entire 1990s. During this same period, world population increased by nearly 1 billion, and the world economy expanded at a historically unprecedented rate and scale. Nevertheless, there was an increase in consumption, which was entirely met by increased use of recovered and recycled fiber. Plantations are only beneficial if they are not established through the conversion of natural forest. If they have undergone environmental impact studies, include community rights like maintaining water levels and avoiding drift from herbicides, and indigenous people's rights. Forestry has to look way beyond trees as a supplier of fiber. Currently, 1.5 times the global demand for paper could be met by recycling agricultural waste, such as straw. Every year, 2.5 billion tons of this waste is produced. While some of it is reused in agriculture, most of it is burned, contributing to global climate change. 500 million tons of paper could be made out of this unused resource. Where these ag straw processing plants have been installed from Texas to Alberta, farmers are excited about their new means of income since they have seen their livelihoods threatened over the last decade through industrial agriculture and genetic engineering. The products are known to meet or exceed tree fiber standards. What are the hazards of GE trees? For every trait the industry and university scientists have proposed so far, there is evidence that the impact on the environment will be severe. And once the trees are released, it will be impossible to recall them. There are already many field trials all over the world, and the trees in these trials might already have a detrimental effect on biodiversity. If you'd like a list of field trials and companies involved, visit www.gadget.org. That's G-A-A-G-E-T. www.gaaget.org. In fact, the impact on the environment from GE trees is expected to be even more serious than that from agricultural crops. Transgenic trees will persist in the landscape for long periods of time. Even though it is most likely that they will be used in fast-growing plantations first, they will still be in the ground between 7 and 50 years before they are harvested. trees are relatively undomesticated and therefore genetically and physiologically close to their wild relatives. This genetic wildness of trees makes negative impacts on the environment, such as gene escape from transgenic trees, much more likely than with domesticated food crops. The genome of pine trees, for example, is 8 times larger than the human genome. Trees spread their genetic heritage much wider than agricultural crops, and some pine pollen is still viable after being transported by wind up to 1,000 kilometers, about 600 miles. This means that if transgenic trees will be grown in Oregon, their pollen could easily reach Canada. What are the threats to biodiversity? Well, the first is insect resistance. An experiment by the Chinese Institute for Forestry to make poplar resistant to specific insects by introducing the Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT gene, showed how the same genetic modification can have very different, unexpected, and possibly very dangerous impacts. After undertaking the same modification, 3 different changes were identified. In group 1, the inserted gene could be identified, but the trees were still negatively affected by the target insects. The second group, though insect resistant, showed changes in the production of chlorophyll, leaving the leaves yellow and smaller than usual. Only the third group was resistant to insects and grew normally. Nevertheless, some trees of this group were attacked 2 years later by insects that were previously unknown as a pest to unmodified poplar trees, effectively attracting new pests while engineered to kill the old ones. These results show that the process itself is inaccurate and unpredictable, and that possible unintended side effects might occur years later, which could go undetected for decades. As we have seen with the monarch butterfly and the lacewing larvae, there is strong likelihood that so-called non-target species might also be harmed by insect-resistant plants. The second problem is herbicide resistance. While the industry claims that this will reduce the amount of herbicides being used, there is evidence that in agriculture there has been a sharp increase in the use of Roundup herbicides since the introduction of the Roundup Ready genetically engineered soybean plants. In fact, farmers who grow the most widely planted genetically engineered crop, Monsanto's Roundup Ready soybeans, use more herbicides and see lower yields. The third problem is lignin reduction. During the chemical pulping process used to produce the Kraft pulp and paper, lignin is removed, which requires a high amount of energy and large quantities of chemicals. To genetically engineer trees so that they have less lignin for cleaner pulp and paper production is a totally unnecessary experiment with our ecosystems. There are already safe technologies to produce paper without the use of chlorine, and there are even closed-cycle productions that do not release any discharge. On the other hand, lignin reduction may weaken trees structurally, and some researchers have reported stunted growth and collapsed vessels, leaf abnormalities, and an increase in vulnerability to viral infections. The third problem is sterility. To quiet the concerns of the public and non-governmental organizations of genetically engineered trees spreading to the wider environment, scientists are exploring sterility technologies. In most cases, this means that the trees won't have pollen, flowers, cones, or fruit, thereby depriving the surrounding ecosystems from much-needed food sources. This could have very serious impacts on biodiversity. Furthermore, 100% sterility can never be guaranteed, and so far has not been achieved due to the complexity of trees. What's the good news? While there is a lot of evidence to be very concerned about any release of transgenic trees into the environment, including field trials, there are some indications that campaigning against genetically engineered food and trees has already been successful. Monsanto and Shell are not involved in development of genetically engineered trees anymore, mainly citing business reasons. These companies are known for the environmental damage they have already caused. Another company with a poor environmental track record, Stora Enso, one of the biggest forest products companies globally, has committed not to use genetically engineered trees in their operations. Quote, "We have to ask ourselves if we have the right to do such things to ourselves and other living beings. Economic and social systems may also be threatened when fundamental biological processes are interfered with." Unquote. And finally, the most respected third-party certifier of wood products, the Forest Stewardship Council, which is supported by many environmental non-governmental organizations, does not certify any forests that use genetically engineered organisms or use them in field trials. What's the conclusion? Genetically engineered trees are an unpredictable experiment with the oldest and largest organisms on this planet. The driving force behind the experiment is corporate profit at the expense of workers, the environment, and indigenous peoples whose knowledge about trees is being patented. We call for a ban of the release of all genetically engineered trees, and that includes field trials, an end to the patenting of genes and traditional knowledge, and for new approaches to forestry, taking into account indigenous peoples' rights, animal rights, environmental, and social justice. There are indications that the development of genetically engineered trees could be stopped at a very early stage, like now. In order to achieve this, it is necessary to establish a broad base of opposition. The Global Alliance Against Genetically Engineered Trees. If you'd like more information, go to their webpage, www.gaaget.org. That's www.gadget.org. And we thank them for this two-page editorial. It's really great stuff. Moving to animal news, we move up to the Fraser Valley of British Columbia, where the Fraser Valley spotted owls have won an 8-day logging reprieve. This is probably over by now. But a Fraser Valley timber company is barred from logging a forest in British Columbia inhabited by endangered spotted owls for another 8 days. A British Columbia Supreme Court judge ruled that there is enough evidence to support the arguments of conservationists that irreparable harm may befall the endangered species if logging continues. The Western Canada Wilderness Committee applied for judicial review of the Chilliwack District Forest Manager's decision to grant Cattermole Timber a cutting permit in critical spotted owl habitat. The ruling by Mr. Justice Bud Cullen follows arguments by Sierra Legal Defense Fund lawyers on behalf of the Vancouver-based Western Canada Wilderness Committee. They faced off with lawyers for Cattermole Timber and the provincial government. The reprieve was immediately hailed by conservationists who said ongoing logging could lead to the loss of one of only 22 known breeding pairs of spotted owls in British Columbia. If we lose and that forest is cut down, it will be the first known localized extinction of a spotted owl in Canada since the BC government unveiled its spotted owl management plan. That's what the Ministry of Environment is telling us. It would be the cause of shame for all Canadians if we allow the owls to be killed, said Joe Foy, campaign director for the Western Canada Wilderness Committee. We look forward to be back in court, said Sierra legal lawyer Devin Page. We intend to argue that the Ministry of Forest District Manager in Chilliwack failed to properly consider Ministry of Environment objections to Cattermole's logging plans. Environment ministers have repeatedly told the company and government forestry officials that this forest is inhabited by an endangered species, Page added. We hope the court will agree with us that the Ministry of Forest must consider the plight of endangered species before deciding whether or not to approve logging plans. The northern spotted owl is listed in Canada as endangered by the Committee on the Status of Endangered Wildlife in Canada and is red-listed by the British Columbia Provincial Wildlife Branch. The species is red-listed by the BC Ministry of Environment, Lands, and Parks, and there is no current legal designation as endangered under the Provincial Wildlife Act. Conservationists say that logging of old-growth forests and the resulting loss of spotted owl habitat has resulted in a 45% decline in Canada's spotted owl population in the last 9 years, and we thank the Environment News Service for that news. Moving to Asia, the Tibetan antelope faces extinction despite a ban on wool. Poachers still shoot 20,000 Tibetan antelopes each year, threatening the animals with extinction despite a worldwide ban on their wool, wildlife protection groups said. They said superfine shatoosh wool is smuggled through Nepal to India, where an industry of 40,000 people in the northern states of Jammu and Kashmir weave it into shawls. Anti-poaching and anti-smuggling work on the remote and barren plateaus with extreme weather conditions can only stop a fraction of the illegal slaughter and trade, said Grace Gabriel, China Director of International Fund for Animal Welfare. Enticed by the market and the profit, many would still take their chances, she told a news conference. Worldwide bans, fashion industry busts, and the murders of gamekeepers in China have in recent years helped to bring attention to the blight of the Tibetan antelope, also known as the Chiru, which inhabits the western Chinese plateaus of Tibet, Qinghai, and Xinjiang. Shawls of shatoosh, in Persian the king of wools, fetch as much as $17,000 in the trendy fashion strips of cities like London, New York, and Los Angeles, where retailers and consumers are sometimes misled on the wool's origins. Once several million strong, the population of the Tibetan antelope has shrunk to less than 75,000 and could become extinct within 5 years, an IFAW said in a statement. The IFAW and the Wildlife Trust of India released a detailed report compiled from 8 months of investigation into the trade in China, Nepal, and India. Gabriel said the amount of wool processed in 1997, the latest year for which figures were available, rose to 3 tons from only 20 to 30 kilograms 50 years earlier. Although IFAW believes bans and enforcement have marginally slowed the chatoosh trade, they have no figures and the trade still thrives underground, they told Reuters. To save the Tibetan antelope, the report calls for an end to chatoosh weaving in Jammu and Kashmir, international coordination to make anti-poaching controls more effective, and greater Western awareness to pinch demand. Gabriel said IFAW had lobbied governments for higher penalties and stronger enforcement measures. In May, a Los Angeles fashion boutique that imported and sold the Shaws agreed to pay a $175,000 fine to settle violations of the U.S. Endangered Species Act. In China, where funding to fight poachers has increased, a force of 180 police has made 39 arrests since the beginning of last year, said Cao Zhen, Deputy Director General for the Forest Security Bureau. We've done 4 searches this year and found nothing, said Cao. In 1994 and 1998, leading Tibetan protectionists were killed in battles with poachers and were lionized by the national media. IFAW hopes that a sharp drop in the price of wool over the last 5 years will discourage poachers. 1 kilogram, about 2.5 pounds of chatoosh wool that sold for $1,700 in India in 1996, now sells for only $250. The IFAW has also lobbied the governments of Jammu and Kashmir to follow a May 2000 court ruling that requires them to enforce the Indian law banning the chatoosh trade, but so far to no avail. The Wildlife Protection Act of Jammu and Kashmir has yet to recognize that chatoosh comes from an animal that has to be killed to provide the wool, Gabriel said, and we thank the Reuters News Service for that story. And the Amazon rainforest could be unsustainable within a decade. A researcher at Penn State Abington warns that unless major action is taken, the rainforest will disappear much sooner than people think. James Budd Alcock, professor of environmental sciences, has developed a mathematical model to study the effect of human-driven deforestation. Current deforestation rates of about 1% per year in the Amazon River Basin rainforest in Brazil could push the forests past the point where they can sustain themselves much sooner than many people think. The other key tropical rainforests are in the Congo River Basin in Africa and Southeast Asia. Using the 2 million square mile Amazon River Basin as an example, Alcock said his model shows that if there is no immediate and aggressive action to change current agricultural, mining, and logging practices, the rainforest could pass the point of no return in just 10 to 15 years. The model shows that the rainforest could essentially disappear within 40 to 50 years. That far from the common belief among researchers that the forest is still 75 to 100 years away from total deterioration if current patterns prevail, said Alcock. Because of the way tropical rainforests work, they are dependent upon trees to return water to the air, said Alcock, noting that the sheer size of the Amazon River Basin has already been reduced by about 25%. This interdependence of climate and forests means risks to the forests are much closer at hand than what we might expect, and we're doing very little because of the priorities of Brazil and the Congo. It's a very difficult problem because of several pressures. For example, you cannot say leave the rainforest alone when people are living in poverty. Rainforests depend on high levels of precipitation from daily rain. A healthy forest holds onto the rain and returns it to the atmosphere so it can be recycled through a process called evapotranspiration. Without a healthy vegetation base, water runoff happens more quickly, creating the potential for a highly unstable rainforest system. Some researchers champion preserving small portions of the rainforest, but Alcock said damage to the overall system will probably limit the rain necessary to do that. Less rain could also mean more forest fires, which would further threaten the balance of the rainforest. Alcock presented his findings on June 25th at a joint conference of the Geological Society of America and the Geological Society of London entitled Earth System Processes in Edinburgh, Scotland. Others have studied the effect of tropical rainforest deforestation on regional and global climates, but Alcock said his study is different because it focuses on the local impact of the issues. For example, In the Amazon River Basin, loss of the forest would probably cause many species of animals to thrive in such an environment to go extinct. There are already a large number of species that are endangered because the forest itself is endangered, said Alcock. We might be able to keep a few animals at the zoos, but we'd surely lose a lot of amphibians, reptiles, and insects. We couldn't take them all in. Alcock decided to do the research so that he could better explain the concept of feedback, which is exemplified by precipitation and evapotranspiration in the forest, to students in one of his introductory courses on Earth systems. He hopes he can advance his future studies by visiting the Amazon River Basin or by collaborating with someone who has done field research there. The Amazon forest lost 17,659 square miles last year, an area about the size of Belgium, according to Reuters. The Brazilian National Institute for Space Research said last year's increase in deforestation was primarily caused by increased logging on small properties owned by farmers. Most of the Amazon jungle is in Brazil, and it is home to 30% of the Earth's plant and animal life. And we thank Reuters for that story. And moving to Africa, that other rainforest. Northern Congo rainforest has been spared by German loggers. One of the last pristine rainforests in Africa will not be logged by a German timber company. Known as the Gualago Triangle, a 100-square-mile forest in the Republic of Congo contains some of the highest densities of gorillas, chimpanzees, and forest elephants in Central Africa. During a news conference at the Bronx Zoo, Henry Jombo, Minister of Forests of the Republic of Congo, announced the protection of what scientists are calling Africa's last Eden. After learning of the Gualago's biological richness, CIB gave up its legal rights to harvest the forests, which were leased from the government. The government of Congo will add the Gualago Triangle to the already existing Nobali Ngoki National Park, which the Wildlife Conservation Society helped create in 1993. The agreement marks the first time a timber company working in Africa has voluntarily turned over virgin forest in the name of conservation. The Gualago Triangle contains vast tracts of mahogany and other valuable hardwoods. And unfortunately, that's all the time I have for news tonight on Earth First Radio. To get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send us email at cruiseef@cruiseio.com. This is where you need your pencil and paper, folks. That's cruiseef@cruiseio.com, cruzeef@cruzio.com, or send letters to Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. That's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. And please send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First Movement, please subscribe to the Earth First Journal. Their address is P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 3023, Tucson, Arizona, 85702. You can listen to Earth First Radio live on your computer every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Go to the website www.microradio.net/FRSC and tune in. There's lots of great shows on Free Radio Santa Cruz anytime. And you can always find Earth First Radio archive shows on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radioforall.net. That's the number 4 in the middle there. When you get there, search for Earth First Radio. Tonight's show has been show number 151. Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis, and I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to a CD called If a Tree Falls. It's a collection of various folks. This one is called Farewell to Clackwat Sound by the Weird Sisters.
On Vancouver Island, for her so old, the last of her kind. She is mighty and bold, but the big blades now are mowing her down. Farewell, farewell to Clackwat Sound.
the NDP had made a big noise, trying to play the big games with all the big boys. So they sold out her soul for hardly a cent. The raw timber's cut and elsewhere is sent. So blow the bridge down, blow the bridge down in the dead of the night. Sink it into the ground for the sake of the soul of backward sound. Take a deep breath and blow the bridge down. Well, upwards of thousands have stood in the way, but bullies just come and take them each day. And the government too has its own saws. They're changing the charges by changing the law. So blow the bridge down, blow the bridge down in the dead of the night. Sink it into the ground for the sake of the soul of backward sound. Take a deep breath and blow the bridge down. Quiet the breeze. And what of our planet when she's stripped to the ground? Farewell, farewell to clackwork sound. So blow the bridge down, blow the bridge down in the dead of the night. Sink it into the ground for the sake of the soul of clackwork sound. Take a deep breath and blow the bridge down. Blow the bridge down, blow the bridge down in the dead of the night. Sake of the soul of backward sound. Take a deep breath and blow the bridge down. Blow the bridge down, friends. Blow the bridge down in the dead of the night. Sink it into the ground for the sake of the soul of backward sound. Take a deep breath and blow the bridge down. When she's stripped to the ground, farewell, farewell to clackwork sound.